conference record has joined the conference.
Hey, Dweezil. Thanks so much for your patience. We are being recorded right now, if you're still with me.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. Great. All right. This is Dylan Muhlberg of Grateful Lead, here with guitarist and band leader Dweezil Zappa. For the last 8 years, his musical career has been focused around the Zappa Play Zappa project. By performing the music of his father, legendary band leader, composer, and guitarist Frank Zappa, his band has reconnected old fans and, most importantly, exposed younger generations to Zappa music that weren't alive during the time. Rigorous touring and fascinating musicianship have earned the band, fan, and community acclaim. Dweezil, thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. This tour in particular is celebrating the 40th anniversary of the landmark Mother's live album, Roxy and Elsewhere. Why is this recording regarded as quintessential Zappa?
Well, it's a fan favorite because there are a lot of the elements that you expect to find throughout Frank's whole catalog, but they're in large doses on this particular record. So, for example, there's quite a few different styles on the record. There's rock, blues, jazz, funk, sometimes all in the same song. But there's avant-garde things. There's a bit of a sense of the humor in the narration of some of the songs and the interplay and spontaneity that you hear in a live setting on the record. So I think, all of those elements conspire together to make a record that has it's probably the grooviest and funkiest record in his catalog, and that's also another enduring, you know, part of it. But I think it all comes together in a way that gives you a fantastic sampling of the totality of Frank's music.
Absolutely, and like you said, all the elements were there. What I noticed from last night's Ogden Theater performance was there were quite a bit of theatrics occurring on stage. In particular, Sheila and Ben are hilarious thespians. Much of it seems semi-improvised, so I guess that all plays in. Why is connectivity with your crowd such an important part of continuing Frank's music?
Well, I think it's an important part of music in general. You know, music, especially live music, is kind of a universal language. So even if there were no words for you to participate with or understand, you know, a community experience can still be had by hearing musicians tell a story with their instruments. But to be able to feed off of the connection with the audience just makes for a better performance. And as far as Frank's folklore and the things that we want to carry forward as a tradition, you know, there is a fair amount of that that we will use as the framework, but we will also, where it applies to our own folklore on tour, we will add in a few doses of that just to make it consistent with the tradition of how Frank would perform shows, you know. So not every single aspect of the performance is going to be recreated to be, you know, to take away the spontaneity of something that might be, appropriate for that night. One of the things that people don't know that much about the structure of the music is that a lot of it is created to have specific moments for improvisation where you may have a very strong, structured, and difficult interlude kind of musical piece. Then it would be followed by something that's meant to be improvised. So our improvisation, it really, it is really spontaneous. As far as my guitar playing goes, though, I will have many phrases that I will learn from Frank's guitar playing that are specific to whatever version of the song that I'm playing, because I want people to be able to hear the music in context. I don't want it to take a complete left turn when I take a guitar solo and have it sound nothing like Frank's music. So I learn enough phrases that I can use as guideposts, and I fill in the blanks in between.
Yeah, it's so interesting to put it into words, especially since it's a tribute project, but so much of Frank's music was, each night it was being performed, it was something totally new and practically on the spot when he came up with themes or anything of that nature. So last night I saw you guys perform the insanely complex Black Page composition. It got me thinking, was there any time in looking up and digging up songs that you and the band collectively decided it was too challenging to take on any certain songs?
There has not been a song that we've set our sights on that we haven't been able to play. That being said, when you learn these very hard things, you know, you always do your best to execute it 100%. But even with best attempts, you're not always going to be able to play it 100% note perfect. I mean, this is like training for the Olympics all the time, you know, and you get up there and you have to try to nail this stuff. And even Frank's bands were not capable of making it exactly 100% note perfect, you know. And so when you take a song like The Black Page, for example, one of the more well-known versions that exists on record is the Live in New York record. And for the uninitiated and those who are not super familiar or not music scholars, they won't notice that there are mistakes even on that version. You know, it's just one, you know, somebody once said to my dad, have you ever witnessed a miracle? And he said, one of my bands played the Black Page once correctly. Once. But, I mean, we have been playing that off and on since 2006. And, you know, there's a few different kind of arrangement differences that have come up over the years as we've played it, just to have it evolve to different things in the same way that Frank did. But, it is a very challenging piece, and, you know, I think we do a very good job of getting it as accurate as possible on a nightly basis.
Yeah, you guys did a great job last night, that's for sure. So I guess, yeah, it's been since 2006, nearly 8 years of really steady touring on this concept that is theoretically never ending. Did you anticipate the project sustaining this level of success when you started?
Well, I never really thought past the initial tour. I mean, the initial idea was to do a celebration of the music and, you know, perhaps reconnect some core fans to the music, but more importantly, try to introduce new fans to it. So I thought there was a chance that it could be an ongoing thing. I didn't really know what the appetite was going to be for the public for this and for how long, but it's had some surprising little side effects, and one of them is because of the length of time that we've been doing this and people's familiarity with our performances, there is a generation of fans that are hearing this music live for the first time, and they're hearing it by us, and they're attributing the music to this band more so than the original catalog, which is not even something I ever considered to begin with. But for example, even within the band, there's a musician, Chris Norton, who's been in the band for 3 years, but he joined when he was 23, And he had never really heard Frank's music. He only heard us play it. And he got into it through us playing it. But he was more familiar with our versions than any of Frank's versions. And so there is a generation of people that are coming to the music in that way. And they're getting a chance to see live versions, but our live versions. And in odd cases, it's their preference, our versions. So that's not anything that I could have predicted or would have planned through, but to a certain degree, there's like a duality of the catalog that's evolving where people are starting to appreciate our efforts because they have been so ongoing that, they have this secondary catalog to experience and enjoy along with the other stuff and have direct comparisons to.
Yeah, admittedly, I'm 26, never saw your dad's band, so this is the way that I experience this music, and it's great that it's possible that it these ends. Anyways, so let's see. Frank's music always pushed the envelope for what was considered controversial in music. It got people out of their comfort zone, revealing everyone as uniformly imperfect. Are there certain songs that you omit from the show that are perhaps a little too over the top? Magdalena has always come to mind, for example.
Well, Magdalena is definitely a little bit of a crazy song. There's other songs that, in this day and age of ridiculous, over-the-top political correctness, there are songs that would ruffle people's feathers. They did at the time even, but even more so now. So like a song like Jewish Princess or a song like Nigger Business, something like that, we don't really want to add gasoline to a fire for this kind of thing. But it's not as though those songs are songs that don't have value. I think those songs tell good stories and they're entertaining. And but at face value, the title is something that would make people skeptical. But it's there's things that you have to be able to be open minded about. Frank had a great quote, which was, "The mind is like a parachute; it doesn't work unless it's open."
Yeah. How rigorous is the rehearsal process before any given run, tour, or night?
Well, the real challenge is how much rehearsal I can get in. The band can get in a fair amount of rehearsal because they have less restrictive kind of home lives. Most of them don't have kids, only the drummer has a daughter, and I have two daughters, and my wife is bi-coastal, so she's in and out of town. So there's many times when I'm just on daddy duty, and I don't have any time in between tours to even pick up a guitar. I mean, I can literally not play guitar for 3 months between a tour.
Wow.
So when it comes to getting prepared for a tour, I will use up any free moment I have. If I only have 10 minutes here or 10 minutes there or an hour here or whatever, I will try to organize my time to work towards learning the material. But usually I'm the one who has the least amount of time to be prepped, so it usually creates less opportunities to learn larger amounts of new music. So before my kids, my first daughter was born in 2006, I was probably practicing 8 to 10 or even 12 hours a day learning this music and playing and doing a lot of things. But I'm lucky if I get 4 to 5 hours a day when it comes time to getting ready for a tour, and that might only be like a week or two maximum of 4 to 5 hours a day. So my time is considerably cut short compared to what it used to be. But that being said, I still managed to learn quite a bit of material and get it to where, you know, I'm feeling comfortable enough to perform it. So I would like to have more time, but, you know, I have been able to do it. You know, but typically a standard thing would be to rehearse about 10 days before a tour. And that's considerably less than Frank's band would. You know, if they had a month-long tour, they would probably rehearse for 3 months before doing the 1 month of tour. And the reason for that is he was recording every single show with the intent to make records out of it.
Which is why the catalog is endless, if you, in some way.
Yeah.
I would have, I don't know what, which I would have thought, how often you do or don't play, but that's, yeah, I mean, I get it. There's, you know, being a full-time dad, that's another huge job. Well, it's good, and you guys are as tight as ever, so that's awesome. Anyways, do you or have you ever considered composing originals with your band in the spirit of Frank's music and performing it as a small part of Zappa Play Zappa? I know you have, like, a pretty successful solo career before this band came.
Well, a lot of people are asking about that kind of thing, and I've been considering stuff like that for a while. I just haven't had time to really focus on it. So it is something that I would like to do and will do at some point, but it's just finding the time to make it happen.
Yeah, it ties into what you just said. By the way, I know it was a little bumpy for the band getting into Colorado, having to reschedule that Aspen show due to weather, and as I heard, you landed on the Gothic Theater last minute. Hello? Hello? Gleebo, are you still there? Hello? Hello?